Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, We All About Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
And Red Powell.
I'm back.
I know. Welcome back. Welcome back. In this show, we're going to talk a little bit about the ATC coming up. Going to have a special guest segment that'll be in the middle of the show. We'll let you know when we break for that and come back. And then, you know, hopefully that goes well. And then we'll come back and we're going to talk about some Sigmar stuff because you absolutely been loving the brand new edition and all the changes and faction packs and everything are out in people's hands and Skaventide's out in people's hands. Like it's a good time to be playing the game. So welcome. And Red, welcome back. Where you been?
If
you
can tell us. I can. I mean, I've just been at, it's called the National Training Center in Mojave. If there's anybody in the Army or other services that have had the pleasure of being out there, they probably all are incredibly envious of the time I've just spent the last 2 months out there. and they all wish that they could have been me. Everyone wants to go back. I've heard it said many times. It's just the beach without the ocean. It's perfect. I had a blast. It's hard to say that I was with an amazing team, which is what made it really what it was. And it is some people would call it a Super Bowl like event. And we did really well and the team really got out there. But we're back now and I am in the middle of moving. And Paul, I will soon be pretty close to you.
Dude, relative proximity. Some more games in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's just unfortunate that, as you had mentioned, you know, ATC and all, I'm moving right around the time that ATC was happening, so I wasn't able to attend this year, which really bummed me out.
Well, glad you can get your head above water just to come on the show. Really appreciate that. We have certainly missed you. Adam has got some stuff going on this week as well, so, you know, it's busy times, but, you know, thought it was important to get together and record. ATC this week is, so we're participating, my team, The Wrong Way Kids, is participating in the 8-player event.
Oh, cool.
8 players. Normally this event has been historically a 5-player event. They decided to expand one part of the event to an 8-player event. 8-player events are cool. You know, basically the more the merrier, you know, but also comes with the struggles of organizing 8 people to go to one place with 8 armies. And I'll even say in things like, you know, trying to get figures and mission decks for everybody, you know, has been a bit of a struggle. It's fun.
I think it's funny that you bring this up because I did my first team tournament in the fall. In the spring. I have another one coming up in the fall. And as soon as we were done, it was a 5-person team tournament. And as soon as we were done, the team organizers set forth like this survey document to see how they did. And they asked in the document, would you like to do 8-person teams for the next one? And I said, nobody at, because I was the team captain. So I was like privy to all of the, you know, stuff coming into the TO from the Discord. We were the only team that didn't have troubles finding 5 people to be on our team.
That's tough.
Right? Everybody else was seeking out like free agents and mercenaries and stuff to come join their teams. This shouldn't have even been a question, I don't think, until everybody had their team sorted before the deadline. That did not happen at this team tournament. There were still people trying to settle their team like 2 days before the event.
I mean, look, most of the time, you know, this year is not normally how we handle business as a team. You know, we are all, you know, dedicated, of course, to getting there and you're going and spending time and playing 40K with your buddies, you know, sharing in the successes and the failures and the struggles. And of course, that camaraderie that comes with that and the other teams that are there. It's a really cool thing, you know, but, you know, life can get in the way and it can happen to even people that you feel like they're 40K professionals, you know, kind of thing. So, if you are considering going to teams events, you know that this stuff can happen and adapt and roll with it. And as a result, we've had to have like almost a shift of 3 or 4 people on the team within the last several weeks as things, you know, basically started to happen, like legitimate life event type things that of course take precedent over Warhammer 40K, and we all rationalize that. But still, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that can come up in the team environment and the team mission to all get into one spot for 40K. It's been interesting, and no doubt it will still translate into fun times over the course of the weekend. But curious as to how you know, the 8-player event with the big changes that have happened in the edition recently and how everyone's going to adapt their armies to it. Of course, all army lists are published and everything live now. You take a little bit different list when you are playing roles on a team than you would maybe in a take all comers single list. So I won't necessarily say this will be the snapshot of what the new meta is because it has that extra kind of condition, terms of condition on it. But it's going to be a lot of people playing some things they are not necessarily completely familiar with. I think it's going to be pretty exciting.
I mean, what a game where, like, you have 8 people on your team, you have to have 8 different armies, and you still don't have half the armies that are available to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's somewhat consolidated, but that just goes to show what the 8-person format does to a certain extent. I know I think I've heard Adam talk about it before as well, that 8-person format pushes you to have to bring all sorts of stuff, and you can't just, you know, I think it's cool. I think it pushes the boundaries on some things and what it requires of a team, but I also can see that being difficult. I would prefer personally, and this might be something of a pipe dream, so people can tell me to go back in the corner or back to the desert at any point. But, you know, I wish you didn't have to borrow a hammer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wish that it was just, hey, everybody with their unique factions to whatever extent. And I think some teams can do that, but I know that's not the case for everybody. And when you've got to have 8 different armies, I think borrow hammer is hard to avoid in some cases.
I do prefer it when the army that you're playing against looks consistent, but it is a common practice. And, you know, what you're talking about is borrow hammer is that we all as a team or, you know, people outside the team contribute to the model pile because, you know, I play Marines, you play Marines, I play a different flavor of Marines, but yet some of our units are similar. So if you need an extra squad of Inceptors or something like that, that you don't normally pack, I could just lend you mine as long as it's painted. It counts good enough for most team events.
That's right.
Out there. They have hobby. Hobby is not absent from events like this, but it's typically a lot more relaxed for what is acceptable.
And if you're like me and you belong to a beer league team, then just bring whatever you want, make random pairings, random roll your tables, and then take second place in every single category.
Hey, that's our plan. We're on the the TG plan of success, the avenue of success. We're going to do it. So I'm taking Death Guard, and my list is 2 putrefiers that give you the lethal hits on 5s, as well as the free grenade stratagem, which did get changed, but I still like it because I think it's going to help me punch up in the list that I might otherwise struggle with. A couple of plague surgeons, Typhus. I think Typhus is an absolute bargain for the points. So he's definitely in the list. A 2 max squad of plague marines with, I've got meltaguns in one and plague spears in the others. But basically one with 2 flamers, 1 meltas and flamers, 2 grenades. I've got some heavy weapons in there. Large weapons in there, melee weapons in there, and then 3 units of max Destral Terminators, a couple of units of Poxwalkers, and then I'm thankfully fortunate enough to be able to add, because no one else would take the slot on the team, Chaos Knights into it. So I have 2 War Dogs in there with the Chain Cannon and Meltalands Spear.
That sounds like a lot of beefcake, I'm not going to lie.
I have some success, you know, with being able to control the objectives, participate with the objectives, create some credible threats for what my opponents are able to, you know, hopefully bring at me. I found out I don't often take the contagion that lowers weapon skill and ballistic skill, but I like having the option to do that. So I think lists that I'm weak against will be lists that prevent that from happening because it makes it, you know, where you can't lower their stats or have something that can easily circumvent that.
Yeah. And for people who don't really understand how the team's format works, basically each person on the team has strengths and weaknesses kind of built into their lists, as all lists do. But the format itself allows you to try in a few different ways to mitigate those weaknesses, but also to take advantage of your own strengths. So I'm curious, Paul, what is your list good into? And what does it struggle against?
So I think it plays the tables very well. And so I think one of the things I'm going to be focusing on is trying to get into, they use the Games Workshop layouts and they're all represented there on the tables, one through eight tables. The tables that allow me to clog the center without being just rain shots at. So I want to avoid the open center table and hopefully avoid a major shooting list like Tau. I don't want to fight Tau. And I don't want to fight things that prevent me from using my special abilities, such as the contagions of minus one bonus skill, bonus skill, or in some cases, minus one save. Is that super relevant or not? I'll take minus one to save as the contagion most of the time. Directly answer the question is, I want to avoid things that basically only participate in the shooting phase or are super fast. So Tau and Eldari, I would prefer not to fight. Everything else on a good table, I feel like I've got a good shot.
You can hang in there with most stuff, except for that stuff that can just stay right out of reach. Makes sense.
And what I found with the Chaos Knights is they kind of give me an ability to, almost like soften up a unit or finish one off or act a big punch. Like I've been able to take down some pretty good things, they add a little bit of shooting that is absent from the army. So in case I run into something like a bunch of Lehman Russes or something, I might be able to use the terrain to my advantage and then do some damage where it counts. So we'll see. That's basically, I just described
what I've seen that in a lot of cases, more so with the knights and support roles, a lot of cases, yeah. Or, as an attachment, not necessarily like enlist by themselves.
What I've been focused on doing is basically like zeroing in on what is going to score me points every round.
Sure.
If I happen to like get paired into a horde list, I mean, I think the fixed secondaries are way more attractive than they were previously.
Oh yeah.
And this list is, while it's kind of small, does really well at taking out fast squads of, like low armor things.
Sure.
So we shall see. Let's actually take a quick break and come back with Jason. I'll introduce him when we get to that part of the segment. Basically, like a pro game master, dungeon master, has been doing a lot of basically high profile dungeon mastering for D&D, but also plays 40K. Met him several years ago, been buddies, and continue to run into him at the various conventions that I go to, and then just happened to see him on TV a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, you know what? It's about time we talked on air. So we'll talk.
Sounds like he's living the life.
Well, we'll hear about it in a few minutes, and after that, we'll come back and we'll talk about Sigmar. So see you all in a minute. Stay tuned for the special segment, and then we'll come back with Tanya and Red here in just a second. See y'all.
See ya.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special spotlight here on FTN. My name is Paul. I got Jason Azevedo online with me. How are you doing?
Very good, sir. Very good. Glad to be here.
Well, thanks for joining me. And we'll do a little bit of intro about who you are and what you do. It may come, needing no introduction to some listeners. But, we met through at a Gen Con face to face, but we'd known of each other's work even before then, several years ago, because you've been, really popular in the D&D space.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And a huge fan of FTN. I mean, I've been a longtime Warhammer player and fan and painter. And I used to tune in all the time and so and still do. And so it's close to my heart.
Well, thank you very much. We're definitely going to talk about that connection to Warhammer and the different spaces. But, again, I mentioned that we've run into each other a lot over the last several years at different conventions and events and things like that in different capacities. So it's always a pleasure to bump into you. But I just randomly came upon you. And I'll tell you the story is,
yeah,
I was watching, well, had an evening with myself and my youngest, and we're just kind of trolling through the various streaming services looking for something to watch, like most people probably do from time to time, and came across this D&D old cartoon stream on Amazon Prime. Watched it. Turns out right after that, it came on another show. So there's like several D&D shows. And then right after that, a show came on called Faster Purple Worm Kill Kill, which we can talk about that because it's got a great concept. But you were on there as a guest dungeon master. And I thought, you know what? What a great excuse to reach out again to see if we could finally talk about this stuff. On this show.
Totally.
So if I can, I'll tell people what that is. So I mentioned it's various D&D things. They're on this stream on Amazon. They've got a couple of playthroughs. like a cooking show, and then the old cartoon that I mentioned, which the cartoon, you know, not to take us off topic, it holds up.
It does. It actually does.
Yeah. And, you know, the voice, you know, Peter Cullen is Venger, who's Optimus Prime, well, whatever. All was firing off all the feels. So anyway, that's yeah. why we, yeah. but I'm glad I stayed tuned in. But the show I was talking about, the Purple Worm Show, is that it's a group of adventurers that come on, and they're all like first level, and then they get confronted with this amazingly powerful creature, and it's about this tale is, you know, within an hour, hour and a half, leading to their destruction, all dying in a glorious
totally
manner.
Totally. Every episode ends in a TPK or a total party kill, which is kind of the concept of the show, which, you know, sounds super dark and so on, but actually is heartwarming. Like there's something about the concept that you kind of it's endearing when you have these characters who believe that the future is bright, and you get to know them in a way, knowing that they're not going to be there at the end every episode. There's kind of a connection that builds during that time. I had the joy and the honor of guesting on episode 2, and then also DMing, and I can't remember what episode. I think it was 16. I want to say that I was a DM on the show, but it was a fantastic experience. It was produced by Beetle and Grimms, which is Matt Lillard's company, who's a dear friend. And they did a great, great job. It was them and Hasbro came together and E1, and it was just an awesome, awesome experience.
They're producing like some limited edition bourbons too, if I remember right.
They are. And so I actually had dinner with Matt last week here in Toronto. He's filming a show, a series. And he talked a lot about it. But yeah, so they have a whiskey line called Fine Familiar Spirits, and they released a Paladin version. They just released a Rogue. They just did a collaboration with Critical Role for one, and there's lots of really fun stuff coming up. But anyways, they're awesome. No, I can't.
But that is actually cool, though. I mean, I know I brought it up, but it's how I guess what I'm trying to illustrate is how a lot of this stuff is linked together. Like you could
totally
live in this kind of, you know, neat nerd geek space and with real quality stuff. And when I even this the show we're talking about, where we talked about maybe what might be a silly concept, is brought to life by the characters and the players and the game master that you're describing, and it's fun to watch.
Totally. It's a blast.
What, so I know we kind of skipped to not the end of your journey, but deep into your journey of this. Can you tell me a little bit about how you one got into the space, maybe how you got into gaming in general, and then what took you on the path to like the role-playing and role-playing for the camera?
Yeah, for sure. So it's a bit of a long kind of journey, and an unexpected one, as many of these are. I was at a party in my kind of early to mid 30s, and I had some friends who also used to play D&D. And we had a conversation. We're like, hey, remember D&D, man? I'd really love to try again. I haven't played in so long. It's really fun. Why don't we get together and play? And so three friends, myself, my friend Dale, and my friend Todd, all decided to start playing in our basement at my old house. And we started a campaign, and then we added some players and some friends of mine. And then I had a friend whose name is Joel, who's also my business partner in Realm Smith. And he was like, he came over, and I had converted my garage into a tavern to play D&D in, and just for our home game. And he's like, dude, you got to stream this. This is crazy.
That's amazing.
And so we got a bunch of iPhone 7s back then as our cameras. That was kind of where we started, on iPhones. And you can go back in our YouTube channel and see the horrendous nature of our first.
I don't know. I love it, though. Experience. You did not accept any. You use what you had. And
totally. Right. You know, and a lot of people say, you know, when do you start and what do you need? Like, just start is what I always tell people. Just start somewhere and you will get there. And that's the problem, is a lot of people just don't start. Mm-hmm. And so we started. And so that's kind of where it took off. And then we, you know, 7 years later, here we are, five seasons into one of our kind of flagship series, going into our sixth and final season sometime later this summer. And it's been a wild ride.
So I'm glad you mentioned Realm Smith. I should have, and I apologize. I'm just so excited to talk to you about some of this other stuff that we have
no
going
worries.
On, or that you have going on. and yeah. and where people can find your personal channel is Realmsmith.
Yeah, so they can find me anywhere, Realm, R-E-A-L-M Smith, anywhere on socials, and that is also our YouTube channel. We've got tons of actual play content and all kinds of things.
And I also like that you mentioned that it is just starting, and that's exactly right. I've given similar advice over the years because people think that no one wants whatever it is they want to do. And sure, not everybody finds a giant audience, but as long as you're happy doing it, that's what lets you do it, and you will see if it resonates out there with folks. You know, if you're getting what you need out of it, and then you can keep going. It gets easier everyone you do, I would imagine. Is that your similar experience?
Absolutely. You know, if you had asked me, you know, 8 years ago where I'd be today, this isn't where I would have told you. It's what I would have dreamed, to be honest. And you know, they say if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. That's not true. it is. There are some days that absolutely feels like work, but I absolutely feel fulfilled, and there's nothing else I'd rather be doing. So.
Oh, that's amazing. So you mentioned in the little bit of an origin story that you were away from it. Is that what I got? You had done it at some time in the past, were away from it a bit and decided to go back to it.
Yeah. And so I was a teenager, probably 12, 13, when my friend said, hey, do you want to play Dungeons and Dragons? And so I played for maybe 3 years with my friends from high school and from middle school, actually middle school at this point. Yeah, it would have been middle school. And into high school, I guess. But I loved it. It was something that is irreplaceable. I've never experienced anything like Dungeons and Dragons where, you know, when you think back to your adventures that you went on, you remember them as your character and through your character's eyes and not sitting around a table playing a game, which again is something that is unlike anything else, I feel. And so, you know, we played Ravenloft, we played Greyhawk, we played a ton of different adventures. I mean, we even got into like Top Secret and some of the other TTRPGs back in the day that were kind of big. We had a love for Top Secret. That was kind of like our departure from Ravenloft because obviously that was a little dark. But here I am, you know, six seasons into Ravenloft, yep. in my 40s. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's where it started. And then video games kind of took over my life. I got into video games and I kind of worked in that industry for 12 to 15 years, and then came back to it in my 30s.
No, that's pretty cool. Well, tell me about how Warhammer came into it. You know, as you're weaving through these games and different types of games.
Yeah. So I have to give a shout out to my buddy, Eric Vetter, who is actually art director at Digital Extremes on the Warframe stuff. And I had hired him as an art director back when I was in video games. And when he started working with me, he said, hey, have you ever tried Warhammer? And at that time, I mean, this was in my 20s, mid to late 20s. And at that time, I was collecting the Lord of the Rings line of Games Workshop minis, and maybe played twice, but I painted. And so I loved painting minis when I was a kid. And so I started painting minis again in my 20s and the Lord of the Rings minis, because I was a huge Lord of the Rings fan, especially when the movies came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And then I entered a painting competition. It came second in Canada for my Bilbo. Then when he said Warhammer, I was like, oh, cool, futuristic. And I get to paint minis. Let's do this. And so, you know, I've basically been collecting since mid 20s. So I guess it's almost 20 years or 20 plus years that I've been playing. And yeah, I started with Templars. I still am going strong. Have just replaced my entire army with Primaris.
Very cool. Yeah,
because it's hard. It's
well,
hard
those
to
new,
play
the new
with.
Kits and stuff came out, and they're just you know, beautiful, gorgeous models. And if if you appreciate the artistry of them, you're even more drawn to them, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I'm a purist, and so for me, scale matters, and it was just hard to field. You know, it's not your grandma's Warhammer anymore, and so it was hard to you know, field the OG models next to my Primaris. So I've kind of replaced my entire Black Templar army, which I'm looking at all unpainted or half painted, I should say, on my table beside me.
Hey, it's not a race.
No, I know. But I am, you know, diligent. I started painting again this year and have made it through kind of, I don't know, 1500 to 2000 points on my army. And then Grey Knights, I picked up kind of midway through my Warhammer life. And so Grey Knights and Black Templars are my two
so
armies.
So you have a type. Okay, I get it. I understand.
I do. Yes, I do. Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's okay. Again, also great models. Like, I remember when the Grey Knights first hit the scene and just like how blown away by all the kits.
Ah, dude, they're still gorgeous. Like, they are, those Terminator, Grey Knight Terminators are unreal. And so I play maybe once a month, once every 2 months. We try and get together as often as we can, but my buddy Eric lives in London, Ontario, which is about an hour from me. And I drive out there and we play Warhammer for a couple days. And are actually, as Realmsmith, looking into potentially starting some Warhammer content in the near future. You and I have talked about that kind of in passing and briefly in the past, and that's something that I think it's time to start looking at. And so we're starting to have some conversations and are excited to potentially move into that in the future.
Oh, that'd be real cool. Hopefully folks can go check you out and then like be ready in case you do decide to go that path.
Yeah.
And see that. But on that, so when I'm talking, you know, I also keep my feet in different worlds every now and then. You know, when I'm talking to tabletop gamers, they don't often, like, I don't want to say understand. Understand's like a strong word, but they don't often conceptualize the games in the same way that a tabletop war game miniature player does. So do you have a lot of crossover type friends, or is it, do you have to kind of have conversations in one way with one group and another way with the other group, and then is that changing over the years as you are experiencing it?
I think it's changing. Like, I mean, we share such a close space. That's how we met. I was at a con doing D&D stuff. You were at a con doing 40K stuff. And you know, even board games, like, it all kind of shares a space, especially in stores and in the convention circuit. And so it's very easy to have kind of that crossover fan base where somebody passes the Warhammer booth and they're like, those are cool minis. I play with minis in D&D, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Those are cool D&D minis. You know, how does that work? And so, you know, my whole 40K group have a love for D&D, but they don't play necessarily all the time. It's not their primary, you know, game. Warhammer would be, but I just started a home game for the first time, home D&D game for the first time in 7 years, playing with friends since we started our stream. And that's my home group that I've kind of gone. But I've started a second group and we're playing D&D, and I'm starting to run them through Chris of Strahd. And Eric, who is my, you know, 40K buddy, is playing that. Now, it's funny because, you know, you tend to have the 40K players start from my perspective, where the war gamers, you know, look at ways to like win. You know, how do you kind of game the system? How do you min-max my character in order to kind of win? And so there's a bit of a learning curve there, because obviously you can't necessarily win D&D. And it's a lot more about narrative and building a story rather than, you know, the kind of the tournament play. And so there's a bit of a, you know, obviously a learning curve there in game style. But, you know, and I like to, you know, as soon as I started into 40K, I like to play more of a narrative game, as does my buddy Eric. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't fare well in a tournament. I wouldn't fare well when rules are at the forefront. That's not kind of our thing. And so even the content that we're looking at making is going to be a lot more kind of campaign based, narrative based. You know, I named all my Marines. Like, I'm just a big nerd. And so I paint all their names on their pauldrons, all that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, I just that's kind of the approach I take to it. And that's just my D&D showing.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, on this show, normally we are kind of largely focused on the match play, organized type play stuff, but there are many, many different ways to enjoy Warhammer and D&D and all that stuff. But, you know, once you personalize and own these games, internalize the games, you know, do whatever you want with them. They are your stories, your games, your models.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that concept. You mentioned, you know, of course you run in games and stuff. Do you ever get to just chill out and be a player?
Very rare. I can't remember the last time I just sat down and played D&D as a player that wasn't content. You know, just recently I've run two kind of private friend games. One, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dice Throne guys. They have a great game where it's like Battle Yahtzee.
Yep.
They were at,
I like the game too.
Yeah, it's a great game. They were at GameCon Canada last month, and I know Warhammer was there last year, and it was great. And they wanted to play D&D. We've become really close friends. They had an Airbnb, so I ran 8 hours of D&D for them the day before the con, and they loved it, and they want to continue kind of making it a con game. So that was the first time, I think, in like 6 years that I had run a game just for friends that wasn't content. And then recently I started that other kind of home game with some friends at home. So it was great. So yeah, so DMing, I've had the opportunity to do it kind of not content, but you know, everything
I've just been
is content
as a player, to be able to chill out. Have
yeah. And so no. The answer is I have played, but it's usually in front of a camera.
Yeah.
And so, it's not, I haven't really had the chance, or at a convention, kind of like you sit at a table or whatever, but to actually play sitting at a table with a DM, it's been a very long time.
It is. I think once you get known as the one that can do it, you are the one that does it. You know, that's, I think that's the way the social groups work. I think.
Totally. It's a forever DM is the term. It's like, you know, always a groomsman, never, or always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah.
It's that kind of approach.
I'm with you. Well, I figured I'd just ask just to make sure I put that out there in the world for you, you know, that space. Maybe someone will get you in one of the games.
Totally.
But what is your style? If you can attribute yourself to having a style of game mastery, in case people, you know, want to go check it out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the old kind of paradigm of DM versus players is kind of passe. That's an old kind of school mentality. That's not really the way D&D is necessarily played these days. I mean, some people enjoy it, but that is an old school notion in some ways. And so at my table, it's a collaborative storytelling effort. Experience. I am there to tell a story with my players. I just happen to be controlling everything else in the world that they aren't. And so we have a great time telling a story together, and everything adds story. Death adds story, tragedy adds story, success and winning an encounter or beating an encounter adds story. And so for me, it's just a storytelling opportunity. And so if the people around my table have fun, I feel like I have had fun, and I have kind of, reached my goal for that session or for that group. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a very narrative DM. I am not a rules heavy DM. You know, even, you know, 7 years later, I still get stuff wrong. And now there's a kind of a new edition around the corner in September. And so, you know, there's going to be a learning curve there. I learned a lot of the rules that I know by watching Critical Role almost basically through osmosis. That's kind of how I, you know, watching hundreds of hours of D&D tends
and
to do
what
that.
You're talking about, just for folks that may not be familiar, completely familiar with the concept, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but there is a concept of when you have to interact with the world in some way where there is a risk of failure, you roll dice. And so that concept is pretty baseline. But with hundreds of spells and hundreds of, you know, classes and abilities, there are sometimes interactions that you might not be familiar with. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. And so, you know, just understanding what every rule is. And you know, the rule of cool is common at my table. If somebody says, you know, I'd like to do something, as long as it's within the confines of what their character is capable of doing, I will allow it and reward them for that. I'm also coming from a miniature background, a big miniatures and terrain DM. I cart a whole suitcase of stuff when I run games at conventions and at like vacation events and things like that. So, you know, it's quite an experience. Yeah, absolutely. And I play music, and so, you know, and sound effects and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a very immersive GM.
It makes such a difference. And I will say, you know, like being a game master myself, is that like even the silly voices, like sometimes you have to get over that hump of, and I'm not trying to tell you anything you already know, and I'm more for people than maybe listening,
Of course.
You feel silly doing the silly voices, but your players love it. And then you become to feel more confident doing the silly voices. And so.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, silly voices aren't a must for DMs. I know a lot of DMs out there watch Critical Role or watch us and like, oh, got to do voices. But as soon as I break out, like I have a go-to kind of Eastern European Borat voice that I do, which kind of helps in Barovia, which is the land of Curse of Strahd that I currently run. And so I pull out that voice and people kind of like it breaks that tension around the table, especially for new players, because now it's just silly. Now we're just having fun.
I love to hear it. And it's really cool that, you know, you have been able to successfully do this and like show people this can be cool, which is, I think, contributing to the overall success and permutation of nerddom throughout, you know, our, you know, global society.
Yeah. It's been an honor and it's been a pleasure to be able to do so.
Yeah. So what is next for you?
What is next? So much. I never stop. You know, apart from Realmsmith, I also am involved in a company called The Ultimate Game Master, and we did a Kickstarter last year for a fully magnetic customizable GM screen. I like speaking in Canadian dollars because it sounds more impressive, but we raised over $1 million Canadian. My business partner from the US calls it hot dogs just because that currency is irrelevant to those in the US. But you know, it was like 600 some odd thousand US and then of course a bunch on backer kit. So yeah, we were at over eight. And so it was great. And so we are about to fulfill that coming up very soon. In September, and so that's exciting. And then we're looking at what's next, and so we're building some future products, are very, very exciting. And so if you look up The Ultimate Game Master, you can kind of find that online and on Kickstarter. And so we're very excited about that. And you know, just basically being able to provide awesome and functional customizable products for GMs, and so I'm very excited about that. And then apart from that, this is right in this, you know, smack dab in the hardcore convention season for me. And so, you know, from March to December, I travel once or twice a month to conventions, and I run private games, which I sell tickets to. Gen Con, I have like 36 players that I'm running that weekend, not in one game, games of six, and it's all
sold out.
I'll be
at Gen Con again this year, so we'll have to.
Yeah. We'll have to absolutely have to hang out. That'd be great. But yeah, so I'm sold out at Gen Con, and I also have an event called D3 at Sea coming up, which is a TTRPG cruise where, you know, 150 people play D&D on sea days on a cruise ship, and that's in November. I have D&D Weekends coming up, which is a D&D in a castle event where we're playing in a lake house in Georgia. Lake Sinclair, actually, and that I just found out today is sold out. And so there's lots of kind of vacation destination events where I run private games, ticketed private games, which is a lot of fun. And so that's kind of – that takes up a lot of my time from now until, say, Christmas. And then also I am in the midst of preparing kind of pre-production for Into the Mist Season 6, which is our – final season of our Curse of Strahd campaign, which has run now for 6 years. It is an official D&D show, and it is in the world of Barovia, or Ravenloft, classically known as. And it's bittersweet. It's been a long road, lots of tears, lots of excitement, lots of joy, and it's kind of wrapping up. So it's a matter of kind of figuring out what's next after that.
Oh, wow.
That's probably going to launch later this summer.
That's going to be cool. And that is a phenomenal campaign setting.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, lots of cool stuff. And of course, storylines and D&D over the years, and some notable campaign settings that people know about, you know, Forgotten Realms, Dragonlance, and that kind of stuff. But I rank the Ravenloft setting up there just as spectacular.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a perfect gothic horror kind of backdrop, and it's not for the faint of heart. It is a dangerous setting. It's also a pretty it's a gothic horror setting, so it is dark and bleak. But you know, doing those Eastern European voices tend to break that bleakness from time to time. But we're used to grimdark, right? That's kind of what we do. And then apart from that too, I'm also I just came on board with a company called Maestro Media, and I'm helping them launch their RPG division, which is very, very exciting. And our first project is a Smurfs RPG, the official Smurfs RPG, which we will be launching on Kickstarter in the next few weeks. And so I'm very excited about that. It's a fun little departure.
Where is it? Where's the best place for people to go to check you out?
Yeah, if they just Google Realmsmith. On socials, they will find me. Also on YouTube, it's youtube.com/realmsmith. That's probably the best way to find us and see what's going on.
Oh, Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for taking the time.
Paul, it's wonderful.
Hopefully it's okay. Yeah, we check back in with you at some point.
Absolutely. 100%. Anytime.
Great. Well, have a good rest of your day. We will definitely catch you the next time. I'm going to be tuning into some of that stuff we were just talking about.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/forgethenarrative.
Hey everybody, we are back. Hope you all enjoyed that segment. Still got Tanya and Red here. So Age of Sigmar, I mean, people have been loving it. I mean, it is nothing but good stuff is what I've heard.
I'm a few games in and I really, really like it. I think that it's even more tactical than it was last edition. Some of your units feel a lot more survivable. The damage in some ways is toned down, but I mean, there's ways to juice things up still. So yeah, I think that it's going to be a maneuvering game this edition, much more than before. And I'm very excited that terrain does stuff now.
I think that's one of my biggest things. I've been kind of waiting for that, and I'm really excited to see how that's been developing.
Yeah, I think that it's really elegant. It's not super complicated. It really doesn't take that long to understand how it works. And yeah, with all of the changes to shooting and things like that, I think that that's probably going to be the biggest hurdle for Age of Sigmar players to get across. Like, you have to use the terrain. Absolutely.
So what are some of the changes you're talking about as far as shooting goes or anything? Like, what is standing out to you as the things that may cause the most adjustment period?
The main thing that I think people might get caught off guard with first when they come into the edition is that for one command point, one of your units can shoot at whatever is the closest visible unit to them, which is very strong for some factions. Other factions, not so strong, right? Like my factions both don't tend to shoot, but they're also not super tough as well. So yeah, just making sure that you are in your movement phase, positioning things as best you can behind terrain to ensure that they don't get shot at the end of your shooting phase.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I play Soulblight Greylords or Khorne, and I can't say that I've got a ton of like range things out there. And so it's definitely the terrain makes a lot of sense in what I have to do with it.
Yeah. I think the people who play 40K are going to be like, duh. but I think people just need to realize, like, Age of Sigmar people who like only play that game, that's maybe a skill that they haven't really had to master before, and terrain didn't really do anything anyway. So I'm super excited for that element. And like I said, it's like very, it's I don't want to say it's simple, right? Because there's lots of different pieces and there's, I think, 5 or 6 different keywords. But the keyword system is elegant and it makes sense. And the pieces of terrain that you would think would have certain keywords have those keywords. I haven't really found anything that seems really anomalous. So yeah, it feels good.
Any keywords that are jumping out at you though, like the ones that
are going to be super useful?
Yeah.
I mean, obscuring is going to be super useful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which means you just can't be seen behind it. And a really interesting one that they have is place of power. So it's usually a smaller piece of terrain, but I haven't played all of the missions yet, so maybe there are larger pieces as well. And if you have a hero within 3 inches of it in your hero phase, I believe, you can activate the place of power. So you roll a dice, and on a 1, that hero will unfortunately take mortal wounds. But on any other roll, basically it helps you to cast better, or if he's not already a wizard, it allows dispel or unbind, which is really super handy.
I admit, I have not gotten to play Age of Sigmar as much as I would have preferred in the past, but something that has kind of admittedly deterred me in some of the cases is the table setups when I've walked up and it's like a couple pieces of terrain or what have you.
Couple of hills. And like a...
Yeah, and or you know, maybe a tree or two. And I've said before, and Tanya, to exactly your statement, I like to maneuver. I like terrain, doing things. I like having a complicated board that makes you have to fight through the board as much as you have to fight the other person. Mm-hmm. And I know that might not be everybody's cup of tea, and that's okay. But for me, it really has been something that
it's a challenge. And your opponent have to, you know, navigate around. And if you feel like if you're playing that part of the game better, it feels like you're interacting with the game of the world more. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, very, very much so, along those lines. And I'm really excited to see the game go in the direction that they're going with it. And I'm excited to see how, even, you know, with an army that doesn't have range necessarily, like what I'm going to do to make use of that terrain.
And now it is an opportunity.
That's right.
It's a fun opportunity as well.
Yeah. So now the faction packs are out. You know, have you seen any people, you know, going crazy with lists? Anything new that people should be looking out for?
I haven't really been paying too much attention to other people's factions, because as people may know if they listen to this podcast regularly, I really struggle with learning rules. So I've just been really focusing on learning my factions. I feel like, so I've played against Idoneth Deepkin and Ozearch Bone Reapers, and they both feel strong. They both feel like how they should play. And it's nice to see some units that didn't really get a lot of play before sort of have some new life breathed into them. I'm really excited too for my Night Hunt, because I found a Tomb Banshee for $19.95 at some old game store that had like a teeny tiny bit of Warhammer. And now I'm really excited, because I think she's going to be really good in this edition, because she has a way of stopping commands from being issued. Yeah, which I think is going to be super strong. I haven't mastered how to use her yet, but I'm still trying, because she is quite flimsy. but yeah, I'm definitely trying to make her work, because I think that
we're not just talking about the model.
I mean, okay, so I know people want to like say, oh, Night Haunt are so like bendy or whatever, but yeah, they're bendy. They bend. They don't break. And I am a hurricane with my models. I'm not easy on them. And I broke one model while I was painting it, and that's it. So bend and don't break.
If you do, this tip is not for you, but anybody out there listening who happens to be playing models like that, or that have like tiny, slim connection points, the Games Workshop model holder does a really good job of like positioning the things back so you can glue them back together, either with, you know, plastic glue or super glue.
Is that the thing that has like the robot hands with the clips on it?
That's it.
Like holder. Okay.
Yep. It looks a little bit like a robot, which it has been the antagonist in some of my youngest battles before, that is for sure. Yeah. But it actually is very poseable, and I've used it more times than I will care to admit, to repair models more than build them the first time.
Oh, that's awesome. I usually just sit there and just hold the teeny tiny pieces, and usually I'm wishing that I put something on YouTube before I sat down to do this, but
yeah. No, inevitably I will lose patience and move. I know it. I should probably sit here for 5 more minutes. Nope, I'm sure it's fine. It wasn't fine. That's the if anybody out there is like me and needs an extra bit, the model holder or assembly hand. I don't even know what it's called, but it works.
Or, you know, you could just get Night Haunt, because they don't really break.
Well, I'm glad you have that experience.
I call myself Hurricane Tanya, because I don't break anybody else's models, but I usually break at least one of my models whenever I go to an event. But I have yet to break any of my Night Haunt models via just like moving or playing at the game store.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm going to knock wood right now.
That is one of my worst feelings ever. I mean, and accidents happen. Things happen, right? But man, when I accidentally, whatever, am somehow responsible for, you know, just whether you damage someone's model or even if you just knock it down or something like that, I always feel so bad when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
It just eats away at me.
Because yeah, you don't know if they have one of those model holder things. It's like, I'm sorry, I did segue us, you know, just with that quick tip about that while we're talking about Sigmar, and I apologize, but I just thought that's like really it was a great time to bring that up because, you know, things like there are plenty of, like my Sylvaneth have weird connection points sometimes, and endless spells sometimes can be, you know, weird ethereal points. And so having that little bit of information in the back of your pocket, maybe it works out.
Yeah. And they're called manifestations now, Paul.
Apologies. Yeah.
Yeah, get it right.
I have to. I will. Thank you for pointing that out.
It's literally your job.
I don't want to be on camera and be like, have chat. It's a manifestation, Paul. thank you for that. They also seem
really good this edition as well, from what I've seen. It makes me kick myself for not having my Nighthaunt ones, but maybe I'll find some in the secondhand market.
So what have you been playing with in your Nighthaunt list? Like, what's your current list look like?
My current list is not particularly what I would say competitive, but it is very narrative. So I don't have a, like, extremely large collection of Nighthaunt, but I really just narratively love to take Lady Olander and Curdas Valentian. I've always loved taking them together. And are they good value for the points? I don't know. But the storyline of them
cool.
being, like, they do. And the storyline of them being, like, forced to get married because it's like Nagash and he's just petty. and then Curdas only ever wanting to be like the king and the leader, and he'll always just be number two to his wife. I don't know. The whole story behind it, it's like the ultimate in petty backstabbing. And I don't know. I just find it hilarious. So I've got both of those. They're big point sinks. I have Ulrich the Drowner, which I just finished painting today. And I have
good.
Thank you. And then I have a unit of spirit hosts. They have a really cool ability that heroes that are within 3 inches of them get a 4+ ward save, which is very good. I have that Tomb Banshee as well as a unit of Mirmorn Banshees, because together they also reduce control score at the end of the turn. I have a unit of Craven Throne Guard, because I just feel like you don't take Curdas Valentian on the Craven Throne without taking his guard. Like, this list is 100% narrative. And then what else? I have a big unit of Chain Rasps that I am taking with Lady O, and basically using them as a bodyguard unit for her so that she can be a little bit more survivable. So if they don't charge, but something is in combat with Lady O, they're all within 6 inches of each other, the opponent's unit will be -1 attack. And oh yeah, I have a Lord Executioner. And then I've got a big blob of Bladegeists, because even though they were good last edition, I still think that they're amazing this edition, with a Guardian of Souls as well. So they get +1 to wound. And yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, I've been enjoying it, and just like rolling all of those dice for the Bladegeist unit just feels so good.
Some things never change.
Yeah, oh, twos and twos. How many dice? Lots.
I don't know if you've settled on a, I know you mentioned the factions you play, but I'm also kind of curious about the Soulblight Gravelords.
Yeah, I've got to do some more. I have not got, I know that the faction packs release, I just have to do some more reading. I got to quit moving and get settled, and I've got a little vacation time. I'm gonna enjoy it. I look forward to reading through it.
It's one thing about the factions in Sigmar is, like, all the models look great. Like, they're just,
you
can find a reason for all of them to want
That's
to
right.
make them.
I think it's like, sometimes it's almost a problem for me. Like, if I want to try and play competitive, because I have all these beautiful models, like Lady O, I don't think is competitive at all, but she's so pretty that I feel bad leaving her at home.
Well, you can build a list around that model and still be fine. I mean, like, very few lists, even the people that think they have 100% efficiency in their list, that's often not very true.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that too much. And you know, and then with the way that the missions and of course dice, you know, like it all, you don't have to be 100% efficient just to even win more often than not.
Yeah, and I feel like actually all the games, like I've only played 3 games so far, but they've all been really close. And I've played one of those games against somebody who's very competitive and very knowledgeable about AOS in general. And even our game, like I won that game, but not by a lot. So that felt really good, actually. Like the balance felt okay. So
well, keep us posted as your list evolves. And of course, you know, people can, well, hopefully you post some pictures of what you painted recently, because it is beautiful.
I will. I'm just waiting on the basing stuff to dry, and then I'll post it in our Discord.
Nice.
That people can join via the Patreon.
That is true. That is very true.
Right.
Well, Red, it's good to have you back.
Great to be back. Thank you.
And hopefully you are able to get your move done successfully and without, you know, much, I don't know, what event, fanfare, like, because that's what you want. You just want that to go smooth.
I hope it's just chill. That's right. Smooth and chill.
And then, you know, we're going to be talking about a little bit about Sigmar. Other cool stuff coming up. We're going to be talking about two. You got to tune in for the next couple of weeks across all game systems. And, you know, keep your eyes peeled to the Warhammer community site, because there's been some awesome models teased. And, you know, it's like stuff, you see things for other game systems like Necromunda and stuff, and you think about, that'll make a good so-and-so in 40K.
Oh my goodness, those weird gene stealers from Necromunda are so cool.
The stuff they just showed the AdMech gene cult person who's like behind it all. That was pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah. Well, anyway, we're gonna have some thoughts on that, I'm sure. So tune in next week and you can find out how my Death Guard did at the ATC. Of course, we'll be also posting some snaps, well, pictures. I was about to say some kind of clever word for pictures across the socials that I use of the weekend. And that's it. Hope you enjoyed this segment with special guest, and we'll see y'all next week, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.